You're listening to the Chicago Audible Podcast, changing up the way Bears fans stay up to date on their favorite team since 2015. Now get ready, because it's time to bear down. Welcome back, Bears fans, to another episode of the Chicago Audible Podcast. I'm your host, Will DeWitt, and I hope that you've been well over the last week and you are enjoying your summer. We're still here, counting down to camp, and for the first time this summer, we actually know when training camp's going to begin. That's right, the first practice of training camp's going to be Saturday, July 27th. That is 32 days away from the time of the recording, and probably 31 days away for most of you that are listening to the show. So, only 1 month before the Bears begin their Super Bowl run, right, co-host Nicholas Moriano?
Absolutely. Super Bowl run sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it does. But no, for real, obviously, every time that the Bears release their training camp schedule, personally, I know I get a mark it on my calendar, and then things start to feel real for the upcoming season. I get to plan my trip, and my excitement level just goes up quite a few notches. How about you?
Oh, yeah. Every single time. And it's just getting real. We're getting closer and closer to the season actually starting. So it's a great time.
Now, right before we went live, you're talking about your weekend, myself. We had a few storms down here in Bloomington, Indiana. I actually ran into a couple of fans of the show at a local store. He was letting us know, like, he loves the show. His kids watch with us. It's really cool that someone in my hometown actually noticed me from the show. But you, Mr. Nick, you went all the way down to New Orleans, had yourself a weekend. I know you said you wanted to share a story. And, of course, I said, please keep it PG and or PG-13.
Yeah, just kind of like a nutshell of what our weekend was like. I flew in Thursday morning or Thursday night with my friend, got to experience just Bourbon Street, the French Quarter down there. Got to hear the history of New Orleans, went on a ghost tour. So that was pretty cool. Got to try some of the local cuisine there. I also have a friend that actually moved to New Orleans last year. So we got to hang out, but it's different there. It really is. It was a great time. Glad to be back home, though. Just kind of take it easy for probably the next, like, 2 weeks, to be completely honest, because it was a fun time, but just a nice little getaway. But I would definitely recommend it if you've never been, if you want to go experience New Orleans. Probably do it maybe now and not, like, July or August. They say it gets even hotter, and honestly, I was sweating the entire time there. I couldn't even imagine it being hotter down there in New Orleans, but it was a really fun time.
Got a nice tan out of it, though.
I did. I know. I once I'm in the sun for even like a couple of hours, I will get dark.
Yeah. See, you're having all the time down there in New Orleans, and I'm living an entirely different life, taking the kid to see Toy Story 4. I think I was more like going myself and just kind of dragging him along with me. I think he's watched the first one, maybe the third, but it was a good movie. So I recommend that if you're looking for something to do that's a little bit more family friendly.
Yeah, I definitely want to see Toy Story 4. I've heard it got really good reviews, and maybe it's gets you a little sad at the end there from what I've heard, but I'm definitely going to see it at some point.
And see, I wanted to tell AJ, hey, we're going to go see Toy Story 4 and then go have him watch Child's Play, but they said I couldn't do that. I thought that would have been pretty interesting. He likes that kind of stuff anyway, so, but apparently that was a bad idea.
It's not that bad of an idea.
Thanks. All right, let's just quit the small talk. Let's get into today's show. It's going to be our first defensive positional preview. It's all about the big guys up front. It's going to be on the defensive line. That's the unit that really paved the way for a lot of the defensive success a year ago with their strong play. And just a quick plug, in case you missed any of our offensive previews, make sure to head back into the feed after this show. Definitely catch up. Again, training camp's only a month away. Make sure to catch all of our positional previews. But getting back to the defensive line, I can't think of a better place to start our discussion other than the one and only Akiem Hicks. And what makes Hicks so unique is the fact that he's what I call a really great two-way defender up front. Not only is he one of the best pass rushers at his position, but he's also one of the best defensive linemen against a run. Nick, I want to know, can you explain what it is about Hicks that allows him to really excel both against a run and also at getting after quarterbacks?
Yeah, so I think a big thing from Akeem Hicks, and if you haven't had a chance to watch the NFL Game Pass film session, definitely go do that, because Akeem Hicks is really a student of the game. He kind of broke down what it's like during a week preparing for an opponent. One, he'll watch tape with the coaches, which obviously will give them an advantage of what kind of strengths a certain player has, what are their weaknesses, but then he'll watch tape on his own. And what Akeem Hicks said is that what makes him so a diverse defensive lineman to play the run, play the pass, is that he watches his tape and he knows the tendencies that offensive linemen are going to, you know, approach him with on a run play, pass play. So he knows the play before it's even being run. And this just puts him in positions to succeed. And I think that's what's so special about Akeem Hicks, is that one, he's always hungry. He plays with this relentless mentality. He has strength and he's just a student of the game. So going into each week, he's constantly preparing and also helping out his own teammates just to be the most prepared defensive player when it comes to Sundays.
See, now that's great. And again, the fact that he's a student of the game, the fact that he takes that much into his preparation and is able to pick up on tendencies is a big testament to his football IQ and his work ethic. When I'm looking at him, at least on the field from my eyes, there are two abilities that he possesses that I believe allow him to succeed on any given Sunday. Number one, his ability to burst off the ball. We've talked about it. He has a tremendous get off. He can beat the entire line off of the snap and get into the offensive lineman before they have a chance to really get into their stance. And on top of that, Akeem Hicks has great hands. He knows how to use them in a variety of ways, either to separate from defenders, knock them off balance, swim around them, rip through them. He can use his hands in so many ways. It really is a disadvantage for every offensive lineman going at him. So for me, the combination of his get off and his hands is a big reason why Akeem Hicks is able to succeed to the degree that we've had. And of course, when you can couple those abilities with the mental part of the game that Nick, you just mentioned, that's why Akeem Hicks is such a damn good football player, right?
Oh, absolutely. And you actually mentioned it, Will. He said that in that Game Pass film session, where it's all about hand placement and strength for him and what he does such a great job at once you put on the film. Akeem Hicks, stack and shed. And for people who don't understand what that is, I'm actually going to read an old tweet from Field Yates, a former guest on the podcast. And he actually just got married over the weekend. So congrats to Field Yates. But stacking and shedding, and just this is what it is, reading an old tweet from Field Yates. The ability of a defender to take on a block with his shoulders squared to the line of a scrimmage, that's a stack. And then you lock out his arms to be able to see the play in front of him and then dislodge from a blocker to make a play in the ball carrier, the shed. And Akeem Hicks, that he knows that to a T. He does that with against Pro Bowl guards, Pro Bowl tackles, doesn't matter who it is. And that stacking and shedding is so important for defensive linemen to, one, make tackles for losses, just make tackles in general, to have the linebackers make a tackle, because if they're not able to diagnose a play, then it's going to go from maybe positive yards instead of negative yards. So I think that's one of the good things about Akeem Hicks. He's so good at that. And then you have to incorporate his swim move. He knows how to do that, especially against smaller defensive linemen. Again, in that NFL Game Pass, when there are smaller defense or offensive linemen trying to block Akeem Hicks, because he's 6'5", 330, they're going to come out low and try to get better leverage on him. Well, Akeem Hicks knows that, swims over smaller offensive linemen, is able to make plays in the backfield. And that's why Akeem Hicks is so damn good at what he does, because, again, he knows, prepares for the opponent, and then just utilizes all these little moves that defensive linemen have to do in order to be successful in the NFL.
Right, and he doesn't give up any, if not a lot, negative ground. Anytime he's going up against an offensive lineman, he's just kind of like glued into the turf. He doesn't allow them to drive them backwards and then, of course, reach that second level, which, of course, for me, is a big reason why Akeem Hicks is such a great run defender in the league. I think PFF, and again, I'm not going into PFF grades, but the fact that he was like, you know, third in the entire NFL against a run is still a testament of what kind of run stopper he is in the league. Now, Nick, we talked about this last year. Akeem Hicks needed a blow. He needed some breaks out there because he just played so much. In 2016, he appeared in almost 87% of all defensive snaps. In 2017, it did dip a little bit, but still 85% of snaps played. And in last year's countdown to camp, we said Akeem Hicks needs and depth needed to provide this a break from time to time because he just kind of got worn out as the season kind of progressed. And I was actually going back to throughout my notes last year, and I said I wish that they would find a way to get him out there in the same kind of realm as Aaron Donald, who played 74% of the snaps. Well, I looked at it last year, and the coaches must have been listening because Akiem Hicks only played 74.1% of all defensive snaps last year. But despite being on the field less, he was able to still put up identical numbers from those previous years. Finished the season with 55 tackles, 12 for loss, 7.5 stats, sacks, and like I said, it's very identical to his 2017 stats. Now, that's exactly what we thought would happen. Give Hicks more rest, and he's still going to be able to provide the same amount of impact. So, Nick, I'm curious. Do you expect the Bears to keep him around that 74-75% mark? And, again, keep in mind he is turning 30 this season, so keeping him fresh for a full season and a deep playoff run is going to be vital, right?
Absolutely. He's going into his eighth season now. Obviously, a veteran knows the game. But I think if he is around that same marker, maybe you can actually have him out a little less, even because now you have guys like Bilal Nichols who have shown great upside in their rookie season and going into year two, being someone who is training with Akiem Hicks. If you haven't read Dan Pompey's article from The Athletic, that's one that you should definitely read. It was all about Akiem Hicks and just his journey throughout the NFL and really taking Bilal Nichols under his wing and trying to teach him the game so he can then become a better defensive lineman. He'll make Akiem Hicks' job a little bit easier if he has someone else that can, you know, come in and rep the same reps and be good reps as Akiem Hicks if he was in there. But I think if Akiem Hicks is around that 74.1% that you mentioned, Will, and, you know, alluded to even before the season, that would be ideal for Akiem Hicks to stay fresh because, look, you can put up these numbers like he did in 2017, but then be gassed at the second half of the season. That's not going to help you because that's where some of the most important football is coming in. It's not about how you start, but how you finish. So I think if he's around that 74%, maybe even a little bit less because of guys like Bilal Nichols taking their notch up in their game, that's going to be good overall for the Bears defense. But obviously, when Akiem Hicks is out there, you have a pretty good chance of disrupting any kind of offensive play. But I do agree with you that that's where he should be for this 2019 season.
Right, and depth is going to play a very vital role into allowing that, which of course, you know, health willing and health, you know, all of that considered, and again, knock on wood, the Bears were very healthy last year, and all signs are hopefully pointing to a similar thing, but it's something you really can't even gauge. It happens or it doesn't. But yeah, if the depth is still there, I expect the same exact things like you said. If he's around that, you know, playing on three quarters of the snaps, then the Bears defense is going to be in pretty good shape, and Akiem Hicks should be able to continue his strong play late into the season, which we saw last year, because in 2017, he had a strong first eight games, kind of tailored off. Last year, he was playing some of his best football December, January, and that's what we need to continue to see at Akiem Hicks because he is very much you know, the life force up front for that Bears defensive line. Now, of course, Akiem Hicks, something else that we wanted last year, we said Akiem Hicks needs to make his first Pro Bowl. That happened. Long overdue, but glad that was finally something he can put underneath his belt. He's someone who keeps getting better and better throughout his career, but I did mention, and you said eighth year, he's turning 30 this year. Do you envision Akiem Hicks showing any signs of wear and tear slowing down this year, or potentially with all the potential that the Bears actually have on this team, do you see him raising his game, or maybe do you see just more of the same, which, again, that is not a bad thing whatsoever if Akiem Hicks can just kind of, you know, keep on his current pace, his current trajectory?
You know, I don't see Akiem Hicks regressing, to be completely honest, especially seeing him break down the tape in that NFL Game Pass film session, just the passion he has for it. Look, he was not giving anything in his life, especially in terms of getting into the NFL, just starting off at playing in a small town school, being traded from the Saints and then going to the Patriots, coming to Chicago. Nothing was given to Akiem Hicks. And I think that he just has this passion for the game, this willingness to study, to prepare, to lift in the offseason, to take on these double teams, to free up his linebackers, to maybe even get to the quarterback at times. I don't think we're going to see Akiem Hicks regress. I would definitely expect him to do what he did, you know, in 2018. Maybe he's more effective at it. You have a Khalil Mack now with an entire offseason train. Now more teams got to put even more double teams towards that, you know, beast over there. But Bilal Nichols, all these other guys, I think you can only expect the same from Akiem Hicks. I think that's what he's expecting out of himself, to just put up those kind of numbers, maybe even be even better. I wouldn't be surprised because he is that good of a player.
Absolutely. For me, I think regular season, you're going to see the same Akiem Hicks that we've seen over the last few years. And again, it's not that I don't think he can get better. I think he will, but I also believe the offenses, even though I know you have Khalil Mack and they have to pay, you know, all the attention to him, they know to pay attention to number 96 up front as well. But I believe once we reach the playoffs, and again, I'm getting real confident here. I'm just talking about it, and it's here, and it's almost July. But once we reach the playoffs and Hicks knowing the potential on this team and that the Super Bowl is a real possibility this year, and if the Bears are at that point, I expect him to take his game to a new level because he's going to put, you know, everything that he has to make that a reality. You can tell he's hungry. He wants it to happen. And he's going to do everything he can to make sure that the defense does his part and, of course, the entire unit as well. Anything else on Akeem Hicks, Nick, before we kind of move on here?
I mean, we could talk about Akeem Hicks for forever now, but I think we got the gist of what Akeem Hicks is. He's the ideal defensive lineman. Any defense, someone's going to give it 100% every time. He's going to take advantage of one-on-one matchups, be a problem for double teams, raise the play of the people around him. Akeem Hicks is the real deal, and the Bears are fortunate to have him on the squad.
Absolutely. Couldn't say it any better myself. Now, up next, we're going to talk about the anchor of the line who proved to be worth the contract extension that he received in September. But first, we do need to call a quick timeout to tell you a little bit about our show sponsor, SeatGeek. Do you ever feel like ticketing websites make getting to the event difficult on purpose? The real question is, how easy could it be if those ticketing sites actually cared? With millions of live event tickets and a price match guarantee, SeatGeek proves there is a better way. Search sports, live music, comedy, and more. SeatGeek has the tickets you're looking for all in one place. They built the fastest way to find tickets so you can stop searching for the perfect seat and start enjoying it. So, what makes SeatGeek better than the rest? That's a great question. To put it as simply as possible, SeatGeek is a better process. They pull together millions of tickets from all over the web. Then they rate each deal on a scale of 1 to 10. Finally, SeatGeek displays them on an interactive seat map. Really cool. You can click on any seat you want and see the view from that seat. And every purchase is fully guaranteed so you can shop for tickets with confidence. All of us here at the Chicago Audible, we have the SeatGeek app on our phone. It's by far the easiest way that we've been able to shop for tickets. I've been looking at those Bears-Packers tickets. Those amazing deals are kind of going down. I'm kind of looking elsewhere throughout the season as well. And again, we're going to the Bears-Chiefs game here in December. It's going to be a big playoff atmosphere type of game at Soldier Field around Christmas time. If you're looking for a game, I encourage you to check out that one. Definitely come meet us, hang out with us at the game as well. And when I was looking at those seats earlier, there's still plenty of amazing deals left. Lots of tickets with a grade of 9 or higher. So if you want to join us and root on the Bears against the Chiefs around Christmas time, definitely check out SeatGeek as they have plenty of amazing deals left for you. And don't forget my hack. Create your budget and then set the maximum amount you want to pay and then sort it by deal. That way you know you're getting the best seats possible for the money. And the best part of all, and here's the kicker, SeatGeek will even give you $10 off your first purchase. And all you need to do is use our promo code. Download the SeatGeek app today and use promo code BEARS for $10 off your first purchase. And again, that promo code is BEARS, B-E-A-R-S, for $10 off your first purchase on SeatGeek. Alrighty, you're listening to the Chicago Audible Podcast. We are counting down to training camp. We are now breaking down the Bears defense, starting this week with the Bears defensive line. And of course, I'm joined here by my trusty co-host, Nicholas Moriano, to give us a scoop along the way. And let's go ahead and just slide inside and discuss nose tackle Eddie Goldman. Last year, he did something for the first time in his entire career. He played an entire 16-game season. Perfect timing, considering the fact that he got that four-year, $42 million extension in September. Not only did Goldman stay healthy, but he was a force to be reckoned with up front. He had himself 40 total tackles, 5 for a loss, and 3 sacks. But the numbers don't tell the entire story. Nick, what did Eddie Goldman prove to you last season?
You know, one, you mentioned it, and it's something to mention with Eddie Goldman, especially how he started his career off in Chicago, was he was healthy. And when he was in, he was effective. And people got to remember this. It's not all about stats, especially with a nose tackle in the position that Eddie Goldman plays. As a two-gap player, his responsibility is to make sure that he can free up his linebackers to make this tackle, wherever it may be. And I think what Eddie Goldman does such a great job of, and he's really effective at doing that. Whether he's being double teamed or he has a one-on-one with the center, he is a guy that is, one, not going to give a lot of ground. He's that strong of a player, and he has some good hands for a bigger defensive lineman. He knows how to utilize his hands, get in himself in position to where, okay, the gap may be open, but that's where my linebacker is now going to go fill, whether it's Roquan or Danny Trevathan. And that's where I think that maybe he's just overlooked on this great defense, but that is his primary job, to free up other guys, to not move back, to not give any ground. And Eddie Goldman, he got that contract extension for a reason. He's one of the best defensive linemen, nose tackles, to do it right now. So that's what I think he does such a great job of. And I broke down a play earlier today. It's where he's getting double teamed in no position to make a play on the running back with Saquon Barkley, but is able to put himself in position, utilize his hands, and make a 3 yard, if it's only a 3 yard gain as opposed to maybe a 20 yard gain. That's what you'll see from Eddie Goldman. And if he can stay consistently healthy, I mean, that's just going to be a team, the Bears defensive line, Akeem Hicks, Goldman, Nichols, Roy Robinson Harris, where it's just tough to run against. But I think that's what Goldman brings to the table, and that's why he's so valuable on this Bears defense.
I did notice the name you kept out. We'll get to him in a little bit when you're talking about the unit up front. But getting back to Eddie Goldman, you said it right. His hands are something that is a very big asset for him. But on top of that, what I love from Eddie Goldman, two things. Number one, arm separation. If once he is able to fully extend his arms, that offensive lineman is not going to be able to close the gap and get a hand on him. It's a great way for Eddie Goldman to make sure that the offensive lineman, like I just mentioned, doesn't get a couple hands on him and is able to manipulate where Eddie goes. He's able to manipulate where the offensive lineman goes. And a big evidence of this is going to be the safety that he was able to get against the Rams. He was able to knock the center off balance with an initial punch. And he kept his left arm fully extended after the center got off balance and was able to fully recover. Couldn't get a hand on him. And then he was able to use his speed to get right to Goff for that safety. I think it was like an 8 yard loss, which ended up, wasn't like they're inside the goal line to start. It was a, you know, 7 foot, 7 step drop. And he was still able to get to Goff before he's able to even set his feet and take him down for the sack. And on top of that, the other thing I like from Eddie Goldman, his hustle. Because, Nick, you mentioned it. He has a job, and that's to, you know, fill gaps, help out Roquan Smith, help out Danny Trevathan. But once his job is done, or if a play is going to either perimeter on either sideline, Eddie Goldman makes a break for it. There's plenty of times where you'll see him near the action when the ball is outside the numbers. How many nose tackles do you see in the NFL getting into the action along the sidelines? Not many. Or catching up to a ball carrier who's already 7-8 yards down the field. Again, not many. But Eddie Goldman does that. And it's just a small thing that just shows his hustle, that he doesn't take, you know, a play off, or he knows that even though he may get gas for running 40 yards across the field to go get this guy, he's still going to try and go ahead and get that guy, even though his primary responsibility is that middle of the field right there in the offensive line. And he, again, he does all the little things well too, Nick, doesn't he?
He really does. And I mean, just talking about specifically like taking on double teams, and defensive linemen are taught, there's a couple different ways they can take them down or to be taught to confront a double team. And Akeem Hicks did a good breakdown in that game film video where they bring down a knee. And essentially what that's doing for any defensive lineman that's taken on two blocks, it's really allowing the two defenders to only engage with one defensive lineman. What that does, it closes gaps, it creates opportunities for other defenders to make the play. And I think that's what Eddie Goldman, you can really see from him when he takes on these double teams. He's really occupying, obviously, two guys at once, allowing his other playmakers on that defense, and there's plenty of them, to really make the play. And that's why, again, the stats don't reflect the impact that Eddie Goldman makes on a play-to-play basis, because a lot of these guys, there's two line, Trevathan and Roquan Smith, each had over 100 tackles on the season. Eddie Goldman's a big part of the reason why.
I like it. You're right on the money with that one. So getting towards 2019, entering that second year now of that new deal, I'm curious of what you would deem as a successful season for Eddie Goldman.
You know, a lot of what he did last season, I think, would be definitely successful. Playing all 16 games, for any player, it's going to be, you know, staying healthy. But look, you see, he had 40 combined tackles, 5 tackles for loss, 3 sacks, 1 fumble recovery, 3 QB hits. I mean, for what he's being asked to do and for the other defenders that are around him, I think those are good stats that you want to replicate out there. Obviously, he hasn't gotten to the, 4.5 sacks that he had in his rookie season. But you know what? There wasn't as many defensive playmakers on the field in that Bears defense, right? Which is crazy because they still
Mitch
had a pretty
Unrein, John Jenkins. Right.
Exactly,
are you kidding me?
Exactly. Yeah, very true. So I don't think he necessarily has to reach that number to say, oh, well, he got 4.5 sacks his rookie season. Well, he's not doing his job. Well, that's not true. Not for the nose tackle position, what they're kind of asked to do. I think if he can replicate these numbers, that's exactly what you want to see from Eddie Goldman, especially being healthy.
You know, I agree with you, but I am going to set a goal for him. You mentioned, actually alluded to it, his career high is 4.5 sacks as a rookie. And you already mentioned that offense, defensive line had no talent on it whatsoever, barely any. I'd still like to see him break that career high, set 5 sacks this year. You know, if he plays a full 16 games, that's just one, like almost every 3. So for me, it's going to be one of my goals, Freddie Goldman. Can he get 5 sacks this year? If he does, I mean, that's going to be tremendous for this defense, number one. And number two, is this going to show that he's constantly improving, and he can be a player to can make a big impact like that. And again, he makes a large impact all over the field, especially with the linebackers, but in a different way, getting after quarterbacks. And I know he has it in him. We saw it his rookie year. I want to see him do it again. So 5 sacks is going to be my goal. And again, if he has 4.5 or 4 or 3, am I going to say that he had a terrible year? No. But if he can get 5 sacks, it's going to be a really good number for him to kind of strive for. And I'm sure he has some personal goals like that as well. All right, last season, Roy Robertson-Harris played the most snaps that he has in his career. He went from playing 19% of the defensive snaps in 2017, and that jumped to over 33% last year. So, Nick, I want to know, what do you think that the coaches saw out of Robertson-Harris to really put him on the field more a year ago compared to 2017 when he was still making that initial transition from an outside linebacker to a defensive end?
I think they just saw potential. There's potential in Roy Robertson-Harris, especially being 6'7", 294 pounds. You could put this guy in the interior. You could put him on, you know, in the 5 technique. You could put him in the 3 technique. He has some versatility along this defensive line to where Roy Robertson-Harris isn't limited, and he can really use his length and his speed and his ability to bend to his advantage. So that's why I thought he saw the field, that jump that you mentioned from, you know, last year to 2017. And, you know, just kind of putting on the tape for Roy Robertson-Harris, when you have him one-on-one, if he's one-on-one with the center, I mean, he's able to knock him back. You mentioned it earlier, Will, with if you can lock your arms as a defensive lineman on an offensive lineman, you have him right where you want to. And then Roy Robertson-Harris being able to bend and get to a quarterback, I think he did that pretty well. And the length really does help, able to get O-linemen off of him, secure, you know, his gap responsibilities, and then just make a play. I think what the defensive coaching staff saw was just Roy Robertson-Harris was able to get more acquainted to, one, his body, because he went through like some weight changes, right, that one year, mm-hmm. and had to get accustomed to what he was able to do. And I think you saw glimpses of that just last year in 2018. Now, I know you mentioned you played 33% of those snaps. I wonder if that's probably going to be something similar to what you'll see in 2019, just because of other guys on this defensive line that I expect to make some jumps, and maybe some other guys taking some few steps back. And you're smiling over there, Will, because you know exactly who I'm talking about here.
He's next, don't worry.
Yeah, I know. But Roy Robertson-Harris, I think that's what he did well last season. And just being able to – the one thing that I do want to see from him, though, working on that counter move. When he gets maybe caught up with a bull rush, or if he's trying to do a swim move, you got to be able to counter that if an offensive lineman, and they will, are able to stop that initially. That's why Akeem Hicks is so good at what he does, you know, these edge rushers. And I think if Roy Robertson-Harris can learn to develop a counter move to his game, that's going to make him dangerous, especially playing, you know, right on the outside of a tackle, outside of a tight end. That's where I think you can utilize Roy Robertson-Harris to the best of his abilities.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you talked about the counter move. Because this time last year, we're looking back at his 2017, and he had really good lateral quickness and was able to get into the backfield. But he was starting at the end of 2017 to really develop that bull rush. And I know you're looking at the film, and I was looking at it as well over the weekend. He really kind of came to his own using that bull rush a little bit more consistently in 2018, and that's something that I expect him to be able to continue this season. But yeah, like you said, once something gets stalled, he does have a tendency not to find another way off a lineman, which is the reason why I think this is a growth opportunity for him. And I believe now, being now technically in his third year at this position switch, he should be able to be refined and coached up and practiced enough where instinctually he should be able to kind of pull together, you know, multiple moves at going after quarterbacks, getting to the backfield, stopping the run, all of those things. But one thing that stood out to me last season when it comes to Roy Robertson-Harris was how he was able to put some hits on the quarterback. He didn't have the most sacks on the team. I think he had 3 or 4. Everywhere I look has some different stats. Either way, obviously that wasn't like, you know, a world-beating number. But he was able to generate 11 quarterback hits, which was the second of all defensive linemen on this team. which again, in some circumstances, getting hits on quarterbacks can be just as effective as a sack. They can rattle quarterbacks. They can cause errant throws that become turnovers. It always seemed like he was just a step or two too late at taking down a quarterback for a sack. So, Nick, I'm curious, are there some ways that you see him potentially turning those quarterback hits into sacks this year? Anything he can do specifically to do that? Would it be those counter moves? Would it be just being a half step quicker? I'm just curious your take here.
You know, I think if anything, it's probably going to be the counter moves, because I think Roy Robinson Harris has a pretty good get off. You don't see him usually lackadaisical once the ball is snapped. He's usually pretty active. But I think if he can really develop that counter move, that just any way he can get to the quarterback, regardless of the swim, then you turn into, you know, a spin move after that, whatever it may be, that's going to be his best advantage to now turn those QB hits into sacks. Because if he gets those one-on-one matchups, just with that length and being able to keep a offensive lineman at bay and then maybe tug on his jersey inwards and then do a swim move around him, that is something that I can definitely see Roy Robinson-Harris being good at, and then making those QB hits into sacks. But he's just got to keep developing with the guys around him. You have some really good players along the defensive line, even taking some moves from the outside linebackers, because he's kind of built like almost like a Khalil Mack with the size and weight, or even a Leonard Floyd being a little bit taller. Go talk to those guys along, your defensive playmakers, see how they get to the quarterback, because they can. I'm sure Roy Robinson-Harris can learn a thing or two from those outside edge rushers.
Yeah, absolutely. And it wasn't like he was bad at getting after the quarterback last year. I actually was looking at PFF's pass rush productivity formula, and this is not a grade. This is a stat. They take all of his total quarterback hits, his sacks, the pressures he's able to generate, and I think they divide it by the amount of pass rushes he had on the season. And using that formula, he was the 17th most effective pass rusher in the league from the defensive line. Akeem Hicks was 21st. Bilal Nichols was 27th, just to put that in comparison. And again, he did have a smaller role than those guys. But if he's able to grow that role, maybe play more snaps this year and keep up that rate, if not maybe slightly improve upon it, that's going to be very interesting for the Bears defensive line. Roy Robinson-Harris becomes a vital force at getting after the passer, because then, again, we've been talking about this defensive front for a year now, just how scary it'd be, because you can't focus on just one or two guys. It's across the board. And if you're looking at, RRH, and you're trying to, if he takes that step, that makes everybody around him's job so much easier. But what kind of role do you envision Roy Robinson-Harris having this year? Is it going to be the same, about that one third of the snaps played? Do you believe that he may be able to, take a little bit more of the pie this year and getting on the field maybe a little bit more?
You know, I think the one third, it might probably suit Roy Robinson-Harris the best. I think if you can have some obvious passing down situations too, you put him out there too, as just another guy that can get after the quarterback, because when you're in the 5 and 7 technique, outside of the tackle and then outside of the tight end, you're really asked to just pin your ears back and get to the quarterback. I think if you could get that for Roy Robinson-Harris, just give him more opportunities to try to, maybe utilize some different moves, that's going to be best. But I think that one third that he had last year, maybe just a little bit more, is probably going to be best for Roy Robinson-Harris and just best for the defensive line rotation in general.
All right. Now, at this time last year, Roy Robinson-Harris was in competition with John Bullard. Bullard lost, and as a result, his playing time was nearly cut in half from 2017. In 2018, Bullard didn't generate a single sack. He didn't give himself a quarterback hit. He was pretty good against a run in short yard situations. I'm going to give him that. But still, the fact that he had the lowest snap share of any of the top 5 defensive linemen on the team just kind of shows you where, the former third-round pick is in this stage of his career. So obviously, the arrow is, unfortunately, pointing downward for Bullard, and it has been for some time. Every year, we try to get more optimistic. I believe he can put it all together, but he hasn't really been able to do that to this point. So, Nick, I'm curious, where's your confidence in Bullard's ability to make an impact this year?
Yeah, that's a good question, Will, because this is a guy that I know I had mock drafted to the Bears. I like the upside. It was the get off. Remember the get off off the line of scrimmage to be able to make these tackles for losses. Well, that has not really translated to the NFL as well as we would have liked to see. And I think with Jonathan Bullard and stuff that just pops up on film, again, another thing a little bit with Roy Robinson-Harris has to do, but Bullard's now had more time to deal with it. Where's that second move? Okay, if your get off is not going to be your thing, and if it's not going to translate as well as it did from Florida to the NFL, you have to be able to develop something else. And I don't really, just watching the film, I don't know what that something else is for Bullard. I did note that I do have a couple good plays from him last season. If you remember the interception by Roquan Smith against the Rams, it was really because Jonathan Bullard was able to create pressure and get Goff off his mark. He lined up on the left tackle, takes a wide angle towards the C gap, and he's able to get his left arm under the left tackle's right shoulder pad and just drive him back. Just stuff that we saw from him from in college, and that's why we thought there was some upside with him. Mm-hmm. And this forces an underthrow by Goff. It's a great play, but it was really Jonathan Bullard that created it. But other than that, it was just, what else? What else, Jonathan Bullard? Where's your second move? Where are you going to be lined up again? I don't know if the versatility is really there. I saw him line up mostly on the tackles, specifically the left tackle. Wasn't really seeing him go interior. What is he, lift 6'3", 296? That's the thing with Jonathan Bullard. There wasn't a lot of splash plays. At times, you that get off kind of reflects in his play, but it's just too inconsistent now, being a couple years into the NFL, his NFL career, to where you can say you could build off of this and he can be someone that you can, you know, have in defensive line rotation. Yes, he's there, but he's taking steps back now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the two words that really stuck out to me that make perfect sense, inconsistency, and then he is showing flashes, but those flashes are too far and in between to really give us any room for hope. Like, my confidence compared to this time last year is less. I think I could have said the same thing even last year compared to 2016. Mm-hmm. It's just every year my confidence in John Bullard is less and less and less. And right now there are other people on this defense that I would much rather see out there on the field, you know, any week over Bullard. And I think that's why you saw his time get cut almost in half. I think he only played in about 24% of all the snaps last year, compared to just about 48-50% the year before. So obviously the Bears are looking elsewhere, finding other ways to get more people on the field, and it's not John Bullard at that. So Bullard is entering the final year of his rookie deal. So I'm curious, Nick, if he does struggle throughout camp and this preseason, would you be surprised if he's cut?
Honestly, I wouldn't, and that's, you know, a former third round pick. But if there's some of these other guys, these undrafted free agents, or, you know, some guys that weren't in the rotation last year that are looking to possibly get a spot in the, you know, maybe starting five rotation, it's definitely going to be Bullard's spot. So it wouldn't surprise me if that were to happen, but hopefully, you know, Bullard can show us something.
Yeah, I mean, he's only going to count against $200K against the cap if they cut him, but he's not a huge cap hit on the team if he's on it as well. I think it's like 0.5% of the cap regardless. So it's not like it would save him a ton of money. So they could just keep him as that. They understand he's like that fifth guy who can fill in that role in whatever degree they want. But obviously, like you said, if someone else comes into camp and, you know, outperforms and splashes, and you can see the hope and there's buzz and there's some positivity around him, maybe they just go with that guy. We'll talk about that here maybe in a little bit, but let's move on from Bullard, who is trending downward, to someone whose arrow is pointing up. And I want to switch our focus to the second-year player, Bilal Nichols. It was about a year ago when he compared himself to Fletcher Cox. And even though he hadn't even played a single snap in the NFL and he was a fifth-round pick, there was already a small buzz around Nichols before training camp even began. But once the pads came on, he put himself together a very strong rookie season that included with 4 sacks, 5 tackles for a loss, and he earned himself a spot on the ESPN All-Rookie team. Now, Nick, I know you did a very nice breakdown video of Nichols. I want to go ahead and give you some space and hand it over to you. What did you like about Nichols' game last season?
Yeah, there were so many things to like from Bilal Nichols, and what, he played about 31% of the snap. So again, a third of that time. But look, for the play that I broke down on Twitter, where he's basically diagnosing what the offense is running, is able to disengage from the center, move to his left, and make a tackle for loss on a running back. That's a very veteran-esque move, but that was from a rookie. That's just showing the film study and being able to, you know, Akiem Hicks and Bilal Nichols, those two are a good match for each other, because you can clearly see that Bilal Nichols is taking everything that Akiem Hicks is kind of teaching him and making it come to fruition on the field. Again, he keeps those hands alive. He's able to lock in on opposing offensive linemen, keep them at bay, then shed them, stack and shed, like I just mentioned earlier. Lines up in a 0 technique, 3 technique on both the left guard, right guard. So he's versatile along that side, plays with great power, great leverage. there's a lot to like from Bilal Nichols, and we've got a small sample size in his rookie season, but when he made out there, he also made some splash plays. I think it was against another play against Tampa Bay where he's just shooting himself in the backfield, making a tackle for loss. It's like this – I mean, it's not that it's not expected from what a fifth round draft pick out of Delaware, but it's great to see. And that's where I think, you know, when Jonathan Buller's taking a step back and you see why Bilal Nichols is taking a step forward because of what he was able to do just in his rookie campaign.
No, absolutely. And as that year wore on, Nichols got better and more consistent and his role kept expanding. And I envision by the time we get to week one this year, his role is going to be, you know, light years ahead where it was week one a year ago. Heck, even maybe week 17 of last year. So do you envision a scenario where Nichols can be like the starting defensive end opposite of Akeem Hicks? Or do you see him kind of playing that first guy into the rotation across the board? Because he can play on the left side, he can play on the right side, he can fill in Freddie Goldman. What kind of role do you envision for Nichols this year?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, if he is going to be that third defense or the defensive end opposite of Akeem Hicks, he's really going to have to beat out Roy Robinson Harris for that position right now, and I think he can definitely capable of it. He showed so many flashes in 2018 and that versatility to where I think now Chuck Pagano or just guys, Jay Rogers, defensive line coach, are going to find ways to get him on the field. They're going to want him to be out there because of what he's able to do with his hands, how he's able to just kind of read offensive linemen and see, oh, is this guy pulling? So now I know I can do a swim move on this guy. Let me bull rush this guy. I think Bilal Nichols has that potential there. He made too many splash plays to where I think he's going to regress or get less playing time. That wouldn't make any sense. So I believe that when it comes down to it, if really Roy Robinson Harris doesn't develop maybe like that counter move we were talking about earlier, and Bilal Nichols has just continuously made steps forward, he can definitely be the other end opposite of Akeem Hicks.
See, I agree with you. I think that that would be a situation that could end up playing out. I actually have here in my notes that if Bilal Nichols can find a way to earn himself about 40% of the snaps, that would be, you know, a good spot for him. Heck, maybe even a little bit more depending on how effective he is out there. I think the best thing for the Bears defense would be, though, Roy Robinson Harris developing to a point where he can be deemed the starter. I think the Bears defensive line, especially that position, outside, you have Akeem Hicks, you have Eddie Goldman. Done. They're solidified. But outside of them, I think starters are a little arbitrary because he can put people in, you know, here and there depending on the situation. But I think if Roy Robinson Harris can deem himself as the starter and be able to hold down that spot, and then you allow Nichols to be fresh to jump in at any of the positions, because Nichols, out of all defensive linemen, was by far the most well-versed because he had, at least in terms of pass rushes, 67 coming from the left, 96 when lining up on the right. Everyone else was drastically one way or another, but Nichols is proven to be effective on both sides. And again, he can fill in at nose as well. He is getting a little bit more leaner with his body, so that may change how that kind of plays out. But if you can have a fresh Bilal Nichols step in midway through a drive, and pick up either for Akeem Hicks, who's gassed, or Roy Robinson Harris, who's gassed, and an offensive lineman, too, who's a little bit, you know, winded as well from establishing a drive, that might be the best-case scenario for Nichols to go out there and make his impact, more than maybe a Roy Robinson Harris in that role, because he would be limited to only lining up, against the left tackle. So for me, I would love to see Bilal Nichols, you know, be developed to a point where we believe he could start, but if he can still be that versatile guy and a fresh one at that, that may be, at least to me, the best case for the Bears defense. Anything else on Nichols? Do you have anything that would be a successful year for him numbers-wise or just in general? For me, it's, you know, he's getting leaner. He's growing to his body. He's had that for a full year of the NFL under his belt. So if he can just build off of last year and just show those signs of continual growth, you know, and do it for a complete year, I'm pretty happy. I don't need, you know, any set numbers one way or another.
You know, I will say this. I think Bilal Nichols can add some passes defended in his game. He didn't have any last season. As a defensive lineman, you are not going to get to the quarterback every single time. That's just not ideal. It's not realistic. So I think if you can get your hand up there, even find a way to impact the play without getting to the quarterback, that's a great way for Bilal Nichols just to add to his game. Akeem Hicks, I think he had 5 last season, was really good at that. I think if Bilal Nichols can find a way to incorporate just timing up the passes when the pass rush doesn't work, and it's not going to work every time, that's just just another little thing that could be, you know, very beneficial for this Bears defense, even when you're not getting home to the quarterback.
Very well said, Nick. Now, for the sake of time, I'm just going to lump the remaining linemen into, I'm going to call it the bubble. There are five more on the roster heading into training camp, and they're going to be Nick Williams, who did make the team last year as the backup nose tackle. He only played 4% of the snaps and was mostly inactive throughout the year. You have Abdullah Anderson. He was an undrafted free agent last offseason out of Bucknell. He was the Patriot League Player of the Year in his final year there. He ended up making the Bears practice squad. And then you have three undrafted free agents. You have Jonathan Harris, a hometown kid. He's from Aurora. You have Jalen Dalton. He's from the University of North Carolina. Yes, he is a former collegiate teammate of Mitchell Trubisky. And then you got Daryl Banfield. He's an undrafted free agent out of Brown University. So, Nick, you know how this goes at this point of the show. Out of this group, who do you think has the best chance of making the roster? And or do you have a player or two that you believe have the best chances at making that practice squad?
Yeah, so I think obviously with Nick Williams being already on the team, and he's been, what, started his career off with the Chiefs in 2014, played there for 3 years, played in the Dolphins for a year, then didn't play in 2017. That might be, I guess, your most realistic person at, like, making the team. But I would take a chance on maybe a flyer like Jonathan Harris, a guy, he's got some pretty good size. At I'm looking here, 6'5", had a career high 11 half tackles for loss in 2018. Just someone who's, you know, dominating at what, Lindenwood University, some obviously a smaller school, but if you want to see the production there from some of these, you know, undrafted free agents, that's exactly what you might need for maybe a Jonathan Bullard, who has not stepped his game up. So if anything, that might be the two guys that I would deem maybe the most they have the most, the best chance, I guess, sure, at making it. But that's about it from the, what, five guys that we have on here? Yeah.
Yeah. And again, we can go to camp for a couple different weekends and our mind can completely change based off what we're seeing out there on the field. But you said it right. Nick Williams, the fact he was on the team last year and he was like backup nose tackle, that the guy that you don't really need to see out there, as long as, you know, Eddie Goldman's doing his job, he's out there, he's healthy. He's just that reserve guy. That's fine. But other than that, I think I'm looking at Abdullah Anderson. I think he's going to be my answer here because obviously he proved enough to the Bears coaching staff last year to warrant himself a spot on the practice squad. He's had a year to develop. So again, if he can maybe outshine Bullard to a noticeable degree in camp, in the preseason, he could make the case to be promoted to the active roster. And if not, I think he's probably the prime practice squad candidate yet again, unless they do see some more out of one of this year's undrafted free agent class. But I think they would probably opt to continue developing the guys that they've been doing now for at least a year in Anderson. So that's the guy that I'll be watching for in camp. But again, any of the other guys can definitely make a splash play here and there and garner my attention too and start changing my mind as soon as we get down to camp here in 32 days. I had to plug that in one more time. All right, Nick, let's go ahead and pull it all together. Let's take a look at the big picture and, of course, play some over-under. And I get to play today because Brandon is not here, so I definitely am I'm a player in over-under this week. So the first over-under of the evening, 7.5 sacks from Bilal Nichols. He had 4 last year. Are you going to go over or under 7.5?
Wow. Oh, wow. That's a good one. 7.5. I'm going to go under. I think he gets around 6. But, hey, if he can get 7.5, fantastic. If he gets 6, fantastic. But I think 7.5 is a bit high. Isn't that what Akeem Hicks had last season, 7.5?
It was. He had 8 the year before as well, or 7 the year before, 8 the year prior to that.
Okay, I'm going to give Bilal Nichols 6. So
you're going to give him 6. You're going to go under. I'm going over. I'm excited about Bilal Nichols. I'm going to give him 8 on the year. I think you're going to see improvement in his game. Obviously, he's a student in the game. One thing I really love about him that I forgot to mention when we were actually talking about him is his mindset. He was talking about it the bye week last year in an interview that he loves to learn from the guys around him. And you talked how Akeem Hicks kind of, you know, takes him under his wing. Nichols is so receptive to that, it's ridiculous. And so he's going to have a whole offseason to learn from Akeem Hicks. He's going to put on an Akeem Hicks type of year from getting after the quarterback. So for me, he's going to have himself 8 sacks. And again, the offensive lineman's focus is going to be elsewhere. It's going to be on Hicks. It's going to be on Leonard Floyd. It's going to be on Khalil Mack. So again, I think Nichols can still kind of fly under the radar. And for that reason, I'm going to say he can get 8 sacks next year. All right, next up, over or under 135 total tackles between Bilal Nichols, Eddie Goldman, and Akeem Hicks. For comparison purposes, they had 123 combined last year, so 135 will be 12 more.
Oh, they'll get over that then. I think this is a group that, even though, look, maybe the primary job's not to make the tackle, they're a pretty good unit at doing that in itself. And when you have, when we're expecting jumps from a guy like Bologna, who's just going to learn the game even more, being able to anticipate where this run play is going to go. So now maybe it's not the linebacker that's making the play. Bologna is just going to make it. Or Eddie Goldman, I think they can get over, what was the number again? 100 and...
You didn't even know the number, right? It's over. Don't worry about it.
It's over. It'll be over, though.
All right, it was over 135. Are you going to go on a record and give me at least a number here?
135, we'll go 140.
Nice. That's what I have in my notes, too. Over 140. Akeem Hicks has been really consistent with his tackle numbers over the last few years, around that middle 50s range. Same thing with Eddie Goldman with the upper 40s range. And again, like you said, Blau Nichols, he's going to take steps forward this year. So for me, again, he's going to notch himself, a handful plus more tackles than last year. So that's going to definitely improve those numbers. But I had 140 as well, so I appreciate you peeking at my notes. But over and under, five forced tackles. Forced tackles, geez, I'm getting tired here. Five forced fumbles from the defensive line. That's the same exact number that they had last year.
Well, if there's more tackles, there's more opportunities for forced fumbles. So we're going to go over, because there's going to be more opportunities. And I don't know what Jay Rogers is teaching these guys, but these defensive linemen, when they know they have the tackle secured, you see a lot of just swiping down at the ball, whether it's Eddie Goldman or Akeem Hicks. They understand that, hey, it doesn't just have to be the tackle that has to be made. Make an impact play, force a fumble, get those dude's hands got to weigh so much coming down on a ball carrier. The ball is coming out if it gets, you know, that direct hit. We'll go over.
All right. I need a number, though.
Seven.
God, Nick.
Dude, is it?
Yeah, that's what I have. Over seven.
You should have shared your notes with me.
I did not. Don't even tell people that. But anyway, last year, the five that I mentioned from the entire defensive line actually was only Akeem Hicks and Bilal Nichols. No others got in on the mix. So for me, seven makes sense, right? Eddie Goldman can get one. Robertson Harris can snag another. Simple enough. But of course, the numbers can fluctuate. But yeah, I have seven as well, because that's a safe two addition moderate estimate. And I think that's why you went that way as well. But last over and under of the show, 23% of the defensive snaps for John Bullard. He had 28% last year. I have the over-under set at 23%.
Ooh, 23%. He's going to be at 22%, so it's under for John Bullard. It's, look, I don't have anything against John Bullard. I really don't. It's just he just hasn't shown much up to this point in his career to where we can say he's going to play more. He's going to play less. He's going to be effective. So I'm going to go under at that 22%. Or it's 1% less, but I'm going to go under.
I'm going under as well, and I actually put in my notes 20% if he's lucky. Again, we don't even know if he's going to make the team at this rate. I mean, I'm sure he probably will, because, again, he's cheap. They know what they have in him. He knows the system. He's fine against the run. And, again, if I'm not going to get into it yet again. So, for me, 20% would be fine, but obviously we're hoping for a bigger piece of the pie going towards Bilal Nichols, a bigger piece of the pie probably for Roy Robertson-Harris as well. So, for me, 20% is fine. All right. I want to know, do you have a bold prediction for the defensive line?
Oh, well,
you're gonna You're going to.
But I'm going to have a bold prediction. And I'm looking at the sacks. You wouldn't happen to have how many sacks they had on the season, do you?
You know, I didn't count that up as an entire unit, but I'm sure I can think about this real quick.
7.5. That's 10.5. I got
14.5.
13.5.
Oh, 18.5. I forgot about Eddie Goldman. I think 18. No. Yeah, something like that.
All right, a bold prediction. This unit is going to find a way and get 25 sacks just between whoever. Well, most likely the five being the ones that played last year. They're going to get 25 sacks on the season, force five fumbles. Cover four of those.
So not seven.
Very specific.
You're going off. You're going back off of your seven.
Okay, never mind. We're definitely going to seven, recovering four of those.
I'm keeping you consistent over there, Nick.
Thank you, because I completely forgot I said seven, and we both agreed on that.
We did. So my bold prediction is going to help yours out. I have Roy Robertson-Harris notching 8 sacks this season, which more than doubles what he had last year. I think he had 3. So for me, 8 sacks this year for Roy Robertson-Harris, which is the same number I have for Bilal Nichols, so that's 16 right there, so you're doing pretty good.
I'll take it. And then you add in Akeem Hicks. Oh, man. Yeah, can I make that to 30 now, according to what you're predicting here?
Nah. You're stuck.
We'll keep it there.
All right, a couple more things here before we wrap up the show. Number one, I want to know, defensive line, who's going to be your X factor? I feel like the obvious one is going to be Bilal Nichols, right? Because if he takes a big step forward, he's going to boost the play of the entire unit. But if he takes a sophomore slump, which I'm not really anticipating here, the depth of the defensive line is going to suffer, and then the overall play will as well, because then you're going to need a bigger play share out of Akeem Hicks, Eddie Goldman, everyone along those lines. So I'm going to take the obvious one and just kind of cut you in line and take Bilal Nichols. Do you have another X factor, or is it going to be Nichols for you?
I mean, I think it just makes the most sense for Nichols being that guy, because we know what to expect from Akeem Hicks, Eddie Goldman. But if Bilal Nichols can really step up like we're envisioning, and just being a focal point in this defensive line rotation, that's going to make life hell for opposing offensive linemen. Let's be completely honest, because if you already have so many guys to think about and worry about, and then just add in a second year player with Bilal Nichols, which, you know, went under the radar being a fifth round pick out of Delaware, he's going to just turn some heads and just, again, have offensive game planners just thinking, all right, now we just got to put a double team towards Bilal Nichols now, or maybe put the running back on this side, because look, he's wreaking havoc in the backfield. But I think he makes the most sense to be the X factor for the 2019 season for defensive line players.
All right, and last and not least, Nick, I need to know your confidence level of the entire unit.
I don't know what was my highest for all the position groups, but this might be a 9.7, 9.8. I almost want to give it a 10. I am very confident in what this defensive line is going to bring in 2019, because you have a little bit of everything in terms of what Eddie Goldman's going to be, that two-gap player, allow the linebackers to get free. You have Akeem Hicks, who could do everything so well. Bilal Nichols is just an ascending player. Roy Robertson Harris is taking steps forward. And then you have Jonathan Buller as well. Again, maybe just a depth piece at this point in his career. But these guys, they all have their strengths, and they just fit and they play with continuity along this defensive line. They're only going to get better, too, now that they're all together for another season. I'm really confident in this group. I'll set it at a 9.8. I don't know who I'm going to, I don't know. Maybe this would have been the podcast to give the 10 out, but 9.8, I'm very confident in this group. They're going to be able to handle the job in 2019 and just make life easier for the overall defense.
Yeah, that's exactly what they did last year. And that's exactly what I'm envisioning happening yet again. That's why I gave them a 9.5. I agree, though. This may be the episode out of all the positions to whip out the 10. I mean, we joked with Trubisky, like, hey, his number's 10. Let's give him 10. But that's obviously not realistic. But no, for the defensive line, 9.5. They rarely let us down a year ago. Overall, a strong unit. Not only were they setting up everyone else for success, but when it came down to it and they're at the goal line situation or in a, you know, short yard situation, they did their job. They made sure that, you know, they hold their ground. They just set the tone all year long. I don't expect things to change. I expect them to potentially even improve throughout the unit. So, and I think the reason why I'm even down the 0.5 is because we still have John Bullard out there and we don't know what he is. So, again, he may be the fifth guy, so the weight factor shouldn't be too big of an issue on the actual overall confidence, but 9.5 is still very, very strong. I have one more. It just kind of hit me, and I think we should have done this for all the positional units, but it's a fun one. Out of everybody that we discussed today, if you had to buy one jersey, who would it be and why?
Oh, man, I love what Akeem Hicks is all about. I really, really do. A guy that, like I said, wasn't given anything up front, had to really work for what he has gotten so far in his career. He plays with a passion that just it burns so deep within him. He loves football, and he brings it every single week. And that's someone that you could really get behind and someone that you could support. And if I had to get, you know, a guy that any of these guys' jerseys, it would definitely be Akeem Hicks. He's definitely a player that you can really just support.
I like it. I think I would go Eddie Goldman. I don't see many Eddie Goldman jerseys out there. And he's, you know, he's a hard worker, doesn't get the appreciation. So I'd give him go ahead and get his jersey to show my appreciation. But if anyone listening to the podcast knows my history with jerseys, I'm definitely not going to get his jersey just to show him my appreciation as well. But I think that's going to do it, Nick. Anything else on the DL that you want to kind of mention here before we wrap it up?
It's a great group. It's going to be a fun group to watch in 2019, and we only expect, you know, great things to obviously come out of them once the season begins.
Absolutely. So that's going to do it for this episode. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. No matter where you are, how you consume our show, you know that you are appreciated by everyone here at the Chicago Audible. We're going to be back later in the week. Actually, we're going to do a little double duty this week since we didn't have a show last week. We're going to go ahead and preview the Bears linebackers, both inside and out. What strides should we expect from Roquan Smith in year two? Can Khalil Mack have an even bigger impact than a year ago? Will Leonard Floyd capitalize on his contract year? Do the Bears have enough depth at the outside linebacker position? We're going to answer all those questions and more later in the week. But until then, Bear down, Chicago.